Russell Wilson is looking for a new contract. Should the Seahawks invest a record-setting deal? Should they play it year to year? Or should they see if someone is willing to trade them an enormous amount of draft capital? We're discussing all the alternatives this week on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. And Andy, I'm glad you're here, because I have some things about Russell Wilson I'd like to talk to you about.
That's good, and I have some things as well. And I've got a big 30,000-foot notion about what to do with this Russell Wilson situation, this brewing situation, but I am not at all fully formed in it. Like, you and I are going to genuinely talk this out. We do not have anything pre-arranged this time, no conclusions drawn, because there are a lot of moving pieces here.
There are, and there are probably a few more options than you might think. I think we're in agreement that the most likely outcome of all this is Russell Wilson is going to sign a very large contract, and he will be in Seattle for the foreseeable future. But, Seahawks have sort of, looked around, flirted a little bit. They wanted Jacoby Brissett last year. Obviously, he would have been a backup to Russell, but he'd be a guy. He's a guy who a lot of teams around the league, Patriots being one of them, consider a future starter.
And just to kind of set the side of my discussion for people, if you told me I could have Jacoby Brissett for the next 5 years or Russell Wilson for the next 5 years, especially if you factored in price, I think I might go Jacoby Brissett there.
Okay, you very much have to factor in price.
If you're factoring in price, I am without question. I mean, like, I am doing Jacoby, especially if I can get something for Russell Wilson, which we're going to dive into. But if it's just even head-to-head, Jacoby Brissett for, what, $10, $12 million a year maybe for the first couple years versus Russell Wilson at $30-plus million a year, I'm taking Jacoby Brissett, and I'm going home early because I didn't have to spend much time on that decision.
Well, that's the heart of this discussion here, is not necessarily is Russell Wilson a fine quarterback who deserves a very large contract. He is, but do you want to give him that monster, what will likely be a record-setting deal, whatever he gets? Let's start by looking at what the Seahawks were in the early parts of Russell Wilson's career and sort of what they've evolved into now. Because what they had with a legion of boom Seahawks, with they got Richard Sherman and they got Cam Chancellor and they got Bobby Wagner was a second round pick. They found a lot of superstar Hall of Fame type defensive players later in the draft. I don't think that's something you can bank on ever happening again, no matter how well you think you can draft.
That's probably fair, but let's say you can still bank on putting together an outstanding defense, and maybe you do it the way the Chicago Bears have done it, where you draft some, you trade for some, you sign some of those guys. The Seahawks can assume, every team assumes, our goal, what we're going to achieve, what we're going to accomplish in 5 years, we're going to have an outstanding defense. That's why we're getting players we like.
Well, this is when they were going to Super Bowls, Russell was still on that rookie deal, and of course the rookie wage scale, which is just completely asinine, and forced him to play on a
Don't do the college professor thing. We've talked about that. Just state the details.
I would like to point out that Russell Wilson essentially was an unpaid intern for the first 3 years of his career, and it's a ridiculous way to build a. To build a sort of economic system in the NFL, and it's something that they have to revisit because they are just begging people to start tanking at this point. But right now, where the Seahawks are, obviously Russell, he signed the big contract in the offseason of 2015, so he has not been a cheap quarterback in quite a while. Obviously, they've had less success, but it's a playoff team. It's a team that won 10 games last year with Wilson as the centerpiece.
No. Hold on. Wait. We got to stop right there because Russell Wilson was not the centerpiece on offense, just like he was not the centerpiece in the Legion of Boom days. Russell, the years that Seattle has had success have been the years it was early in Wilson's career and then back to last year. It's been the years that they were a very run-heavy offense, and the offense went through their ground game. And Wilson is a facet of that. He is not, he's not even Cam Newton in that equation where it's built around him. He is a puzzle piece in their ground game.
is sort of a puzzle piece. I want to get into this in a little bit. I think he works better with that style of offense for the reason that he is the best deep ball passer in the NFL right now. I think we have to start recognizing that with a lot of guys, you wouldn't build it this way because you can't trust that kind of consistency from play to play when you're asking a guy to throw these deep rainbow throws and drop them into guys. But I think he's so good at it, you just have to recognize that we can build around this. This can be something we can count on getting a couple times every week.
But is that the starting point, you think, when Brian Schottenheimer, their offensive coordinator, and Pete Carroll sit down and say, all right, what do we want to be on offense? Do you think they're starting with, we want to be a big play offense and get Russ throwing the ball downfield? Or do you think they say, we want to control the ball, be a run-heavy offense? And by the way, a side benefit of that is we get some big downfield shot play opportunities with Russ, who's very good at those.
I don't think you can look at the big-time plays as a side benefit anymore in this day and age. In 2018, I think you have to look at it as, how are we going to get those big plays, and we are going to get them with the play action and with Russ throwing off of play action, and that's the way we're gonna build this thing.
Seattle, though, they ran the ball more than I think any team in the NFL last year. They were certainly right at the very top if they didn't wind up finishing at the very top. So someone has to still be the run-heavy team. And when you're facing Seattle, you're facing the run-heaviest team you're going to have on your schedule all year.
That is true. They, I'll bring up the play selection real quick just so we can solidify that. They, 52.8% rush percentage, according to Stats Inc., which they were the only team over 50%. Second place would have been Tennessee at 48.4%.
That's a huge margin of difference, by the way. That's a run-based team, Gary. You can't say that's a play-action, shot-play type of team.
It is, but the play-action shot plays are so effective. He's so good at it. He's so much better at it. I don't think it's necessarily a huge gap between, you know, it's a front-running team. It's a team that that will run the ball a lot in the second half of games. But I think the play-action big plays are basically baked into this offense in a way that they can trust on getting them much more frequently and much more efficiently than other teams could do.
If we're talking just strictly vertical shots, and we're also factoring in Wilson's scramble potential when he doesn't pull the trigger on those vertical shots, when it's not there, he's not liking what he's seeing, maybe that's a discussion. But Seattle does not have an expansive play-action game. They're not the Rams, and they're certainly not what the Chiefs are with Patrick Mahomes. So I think someone could argue, is the better deep ball thrower than Wilson at this point. But even if that's what you are, that's 8 to 10 snaps a game that you're doing that. You're not getting into your play-action vertical shots a whole lot more. You're going to be running the ball 35 times a game still.
All right, Andy, before we move on here, you know, a quick note from a sponsor. You know, guys are terrible at taking care of their health, whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse. Guys are usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt in it than seeing a doctor. I think we're all guilty of it. The same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created a simple, secure way to get checked out by a doctor and get treated for ED online. Roman is a one-stop shop where licensed U.S. physicians can diagnose ED and ship medication right to your door. With Roman, there are no waiting rooms, awkward face-to-face conversations, or uncomfortable trips to the pharmacy. You can handle everything discreetly online. All you have to do is visit GetRoman.com/MMQB, fill out a brief medical onboarding chat with a doctor, and get genuine medication delivered to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. Guys, go online and get checked by a doctor. Erectile dysfunction is a problem that guys don't tackle, but with Roman, it's really easy, so take care of it. For a free visit online, go to GetRoman.com/MMQB. That's GetRoman.com/MMQB for a free online visit. GetRoman.com/MMQB. All right, Andy, I'm going to go on the defensive to start this thing off. I guess we're like halfway through it, but I'll say to start this thing off. There are drawbacks with Russell Wilson. He is a small quarterback. People go out of their minds when you point that out. But, you know, you can't do a lot of the ideal launching point for most play designs are, you know, tend to be closer to the line of scrimmage, and you're going to be in a more condensed pocket. He is simply a smaller guy. He can't do all those things, and people try to cite batted passes, stuff like that. It just, when you're 5'11", vision becomes more of an issue when you're in those really tight spaces.
Absolutely. And it's not just batted passes. It's what you, it's like you said, vision, and what that means for the way you read the field and the way you interact with your play design. And that's where you get a little bit of a wild card with Russell Wilson. Now, it doesn't mean you can't play with them, obviously, but the Seahawks will tell you in honest moments when you're talking to their offensive architects, yeah, there are times he does not see from the pocket, and that impacts the kind of offense you run with him. Absolutely. And this is, that's not like an opinion, by the way. That gets treated as analysis. If he can't see, he can't see. And the people who design the offense are telling you, yeah, there are times that he can't see. You have to work around that.
He also, and look, I feel like under Daryl Bevel, they had the improvisational stuff kind of built into their offense a little bit more than maybe they did under Brian Schottenheimer. I don't know if that's fair to say. Obviously, they were a more traditional offense last year, and they played with the lead a little more often than people expected them to. But I feel like it was a more structured approach last year. I don't know if that's fair to say.
No, that's absolutely fair, because what happened over the years with Bevel is because he was there a long time, and they'd run the same plays, and they'd say, well, remember we ran this play at this one point, and Russ ran around and they did this, and I went here and it worked out well. So what they would do after a certain amount of time over the course of the years, they had two versions of a lot of their plays, what they called the solid line version, how the play is drawn up, and then the dotted line version, which is what everyone's supposed to do when Wilson breaks it down. That's a smart way to coach. It sounds like, oh, that's a great answer, but you have to remember that dotted line version is not going to be the same from one time to the next. That's why the solid line versions are how everybody else draws their plays. But they absolutely did design more out of structure, so to speak, for with Russell Wilson. The problem, though, Gary, it's hard to get everybody to play that on the same page that way. In fact, I think the only team we've seen do it with sustained success was the Packers a few years ago, when it was Rodgers with Jordy Nelson and James Jones and some of those really veteran receivers who had been there with him for a while. Even we go back to Green Bay, look what happened to their offense when they started cycling in different receivers. The out of structure stuff for them even became a problem.
All right. And now I'm going to turn around and go on the offensive and I don't know, defeat you at this point. This isn't really a competition, but I'll just say it that way anyway. And I'm going to start this argument off with the way all great arguments are started, and that's with a cross-sport metaphor. A lot of people compare quarterbacks to point guards in the NBA. I really think Russell Wilson is like the NFL's version of Steph Curry in that the things that Steph Curry does, the shots he attempts, the way he gets to those shots, you would never ask another NBA point guard to do those things, but he is capable of doing them, and he can do them more efficiently than anyone else can. I think Russell Wilson, especially as a deep thrower, and look, this league is built on big plays. That's how you put up points. That's how you win games in 2018, 2019. As a deep ball thrower and some of the improvisational things he can do off of play action, I think he is so much better at it than basically any other quarterback in the league. You build it into your offense, and that's he gives you more value there than anyone else would, and it allows you to say have an offense that is a little more of a 90s approach as far as the run pass balance goes, but they can still produce like a modern playoff offense.
Okay. I mean, not to nitpick, but if we're going to make the Steph Curry deal, I mean, I think Patrick Mahomes is Steph Curry. Not just because, for one, they've got similar body language and demeanor. There's an easy slack to the way they carry themselves as athletes. For two, and I don't know a lot about basketball, so you can, I mean, I do, but I not like I know football. You can correct me if I'm wrong here, but there are not parts of the Golden State Warriors offense that they have to work around because it doesn't play to Steph very well. They run, they can play on schedule or off schedule very easily there in Golden State, can't they?
Yeah. You could say defensively they have to work around some things with Steph.
Well,
how about that? Because you got to play both sides of the ball,
which is where your analogy is going to break down. Terrible. Yeah, right. So, I mean, I hear what you're saying. And I'm a big proponent of deep shot play action built off your running game. I like that. I think if you're a run-based team in the NFL, your offense is only as good as the explosive pass plays you can build off of your run plays, even if you're a run-based team. So I don't disagree with you about Will. We're saying the same thing, and he throws a beautiful deep ball, and he's very good outside the pocket, which is a big deal because a lot of those play-action shots will have some rollout elements to it. Having said all that, Gary, what you can do with Wilson on play-action, you can do that with a lot of QBs. You could do it with Jacoby Brissett. Theoretically, you could do it with Matthew Stafford. You could do it with Drew Brees, even maybe a little bit of a less degree there. I don't think it's a big enough component to justify building an offense around that QB, because what you're basically saying is he throws the deep ball well and he's a little bit of a threat in the run game, and that's what he is. And I say, yeah, and he's actually great at all that, but that's not enough to warrant being worth $30+ million, because that's going to impact how we build the rest of the team. And with a quarterback like that, you need a great team around him.
Well, I would argue that he throws a deep ball exceptionally well. I think he is special in that aspect. So stylistically, you'd do the same thing with a Jacoby Brissett, but you would not get the same outcome.
Yeah, that's probably fair. But then it raises the question: is that a big enough deal would be more inclined to do it more often with Wilson? And probably you would. Maybe you would. But we're still talking 2 or 3 snaps a game. Is that part of your foundation? Is that part of your identity? If you're taking 8 deep shots a game, let's say 2 per quarter, which is a lot. No team's actually getting to that. They might say we try to do that, but they're not doing it. But let's say you do 8 a game and you run the ball 35 times. That's also a lot. That's 43 snaps. What happens on the other 25 snaps in the game that you're running? What do you do then?
You'll come up with something.
Well,
I don't know specifically what to do.
And for a lot of years, the answer in Seattle has been you just drop back and hope Wilson makes a play. And I don't think that's good enough. I think that's too complex. That puts too many question marks at the variables around Wilson. Even if he is great at it, you've got to have everybody else be on the same page. Your blockers have to know how to block for a quarterback who they don't know where he's going to be. You can't do that. Your receivers have to get good in scramble drill mode. They have to read coverages in scramble drill mode. They haven't practiced that. They haven't grown up doing that. So Wilson is comfortable in sandlot play, but because he's to kind of drift back to your analogy, he's the point guard of the offense, then you have to have everyone around him also be at least almost as comfortable as him. And if they're not, then you're going to be in very inconsistent offense, which is what Seattle has been whenever they've gotten away from a run-first approach.
Well, let me ask you this, Andy, and I do appreciate your recognition of my analogy, and then we could get back and salvage that some way. But the supporting cast, and I would argue 2 or 3 years ago when Doug Baldwin was healthier, and Jimmy Graham was there. I mean, they traded a first-round pick for Jimmy Graham for a reason. I think they had a talented supporting cast. And I'm talking about just the passing game at this point. It wasn't quite as good once Marshawn Lynch left in the as far as the run game goes. But I think they had passing game weapons there. They kind of didn't last. I mean, Tyler Lockett is a good player. I don't know if Tyler Lockett's really anyone's idea of a number one receiver. Doug Baldwin was banged up. It was a lot of David Moore last year.
Yep.
They made it work with not a whole lot of talent. And look, if you're going to spend money on a running back, you're not going to spend money on a running back and basically the investment in the run game is not the same that it's going to be in your receivers and stuff like that. Basically, you can build a run game for relatively cheap as opposed to the passing game. So is there some efficiency you can make up for there when it comes to Wilson? Because basically you're saying, we'll make it work with sort of, B-, C-plus type of talent in the receiving core, guys we're not going to really have to pay, and then we'll get our running backs and we'll build up a halfway decent offensive line, and that, especially the running backs, won't be quite as expensive as trying to put together a superstar receiving core.
Well, I think if you're going to build around a QB with average supporting cast players, kind of the New England Patriots approach for a lot of years, Mm-hmm. Not certainly not with Gronkowski, but you know, we've always said they don't have a great receiving core. What the Patriots do have is a great quarterback who has a very defined system. So I think your system has to take care of it if you don't have as much talent as everybody else. And that brings us back to the problem of what kind of system do you run passing game-wise with Russell Wilson, because you can't do everything with Russell Wilson under the sun. And the other thing, Gary, that isn't talked about outside of football but is talked about in Seattle is there are certain coverages that Wilson is not as comfortable playing against, and I don't think he's viewed there as a true bona fide field general. He's not a surgeon the way that Breeze or Brady is certainly, but even the way that Patrick Mahomes was last year, where he's just controlling the game in both the pre-snap and post-snap phase. He is a street ball player, and it's hard to stalk the right kind of talent around a guy like that.
Well, let's get into the money a little bit, because that's really what we're coming down to here. Wilson will presumably get over $30 million annually. He's probably going to go up against that Matt Ryan number, which I think is 94.5 as far as fully guaranteed money goes. In short, he takes up a lot of cap space if you're going to have Russell Wilson as your quarterback. Now, back in 2015, they gave him the what came to a four-year $88 million deal, which was, it was a lot of money at the time. Obviously, the cap keeps on growing and the market keeps on growing for quarterbacks. So the question is, someone's going to pay him. If you're the Seattle Seahawks, are you that team?
I think my perfect scenario, if I'm John Schneider, their GM, and if I'm Pete Carroll, who I'm sure they work together on a lot of these decisions, the perfect scenario is we play him this year, get a cheap deal, and we trade him next year for a boatload somehow. Now,
When you say cheap deal, you're talking about his existing
deal. Well, what he's
deal,
on
which,
now,
which
yeah.
Is and relative, yeah, not cheap, but relative to
correct.
What he'll be getting.
Correct. It'll feel cheap once you start thinking about what you're going to have to pay him next year. So before it gets to the next year, I would bail on it and get out with a golden parachute and a trade package if I can do that. That raises the question, though, who you're trading them with and under what conditions. And that's where it gets harder, because the rest of the NFL, they want to have this cheap quarterback advantage too. And they have the draft to choose from, and they've got their capital and they have their resources. And there aren't a ton of quarterback needy teams right now. So, I mean, just look at the trade market for Josh Rosen, who was a mid first round pick a year ago. So, I think that's, if I'm Seattle, honestly, if I can get two first rounders for Wilson, I think I'm doing that. And I know I was on the Will Cain show earlier this week, and he was saying, well, what if you get three first rounders? If I get three first rounders for Wilson, that is a no brainer to me if I'm the Seahawks.
I don't know if anyone's giving up three first rounders.
I don't either. Yeah.
Realistically, I think two first rounders is if he is going to be traded, I think that's a realistic market, I would think.
Oh, I think that's the floor for a quality starting quarterback. I can almost, without citing specifics, I can almost guarantee you, based on some of the stuff I've heard around the league for trades that could have happened or didn't happen, that's the floor for sure. I think two ones plus what do you get for second, third round picks as well.
Then it sort of becomes, okay, well, how are you getting your next guy? Are you drafting your next guy?
I would. I mean, again, let's assume there's someone in the draft they like in Seattle, which is a big assumption. So if there's not,
yes,
then that's a dip. But we're just having a hypothetical conversation. That's absolutely the route I would go, because our offense, what's also true about a run first offense and a play action offense is it is simple on the quarterback. You hand the ball off, or you read half the field, which is what you do on almost every play action pass. You're not doing full field reads. I would say, in theory, then you could transition a rookie quarterback into that approach pretty well and not skip a beat. And that brings us back to the money. That's part of the reason I would say, why would we pay Russell Wilson $30+ million when all we're asking him to do is run a fairly simple scheme that other QBs can run? Intellectually, they can run it. They're not as talented, but they can,
yeah,
they can at least attempt to do what we're asking them to do.
I think that's what it comes down to, is you're going to have someone less talented in all likelihood. You have a known commodity with Russell Wilson. You have a guy who obviously you've You've won a Super Bowl with, you've been to the playoffs even after he's gotten this larger deal and sort of they've retooled the roster around him. So it's almost like, okay, let's say there's a quarterback they love and they want more than Russell Wilson. Presumably, you have to get up to the top of the draft to get that guy. Will, you know, is your three late first rounders going to convince another quarterback needy team to trade out? So, are you sure you can even get the opportunity to trade up and draft this guy who is also all, you know, in his own way, an unknown quantity as far as what you're going to be doing going forward?
That's a great question, because if you can't, then what is your fallback option? And are you willing, is it a safe enough fallback option that you'd be willing to take the gamble? Because the last thing you want to do is trade Russell Wilson and then not get your guy in the draft somehow, and then all of a sudden you just flat out don't have a quarterback. So, and if you would ever make a move as big as trading your franchise QB, I would imagine you'd only do so under the condition that you're 99.5% sure you'd get what you want down the road.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to have that guy ID'd at that point.
The money, Gary, is still what complicates all of this, though, because what's a veteran QB going to cost versus a rookie? 4 or 5 times as much by the time it's all said and done. So that's where you have to get back. Is Russell Wilson, and what we're talking about, is he 4 or 5 times better than the next option? Let's say even, is he 3 times better than a rookie option? Because that difference in money there, that's 2 marquee, first-rate superstar defensive players potentially, in the very least. And it's probably 4 or 5 starting caliber players that you could sign in free agency.
And
quality starters.
That's the problem with the rookie wage scale.
That's not what we're talking about today.
That's what the show was all about all along. But it kind of is. It always comes back to that. I think this is my last question for you, Andy, or my last point to raise. And I know you're not going to like it, but does the sentimentality play into this at all? I mean, if you're the Seahawks and Russell Wilson is a guy who, as we will find out, I'm sure, in the next week, fans are very, very attached to. I mean, they really like Russell Wilson, and he has accomplished things in Seattle that other quarterbacks never did. Is it too ice cold for the Seahawks to move on from him for what is a risk? I mean, it's a calculated risk, but it's still a risk.
Well, I think you know what my answer would be, at least what it should be. Sentimentality probably should not be anything remotely close to a factor when you're building your roster. But I understand how that can work. I really do. And emotion does play a factor. And even though these guys tell you we don't listen to the fans, you know, I don't know if they put it that way, but that's what they mean. You know, if you listen to the fans, you'll be sitting up there with them one day. That's the old cliche. They might say, yeah, it's true. You gotta keep your blinders on and tune it all out. But they don't do that. I've had a lot of coaches tell me, I say, why'd you call this play in that scenario? And, you know, it didn't work out. It wasn't a great call. And they said, I didn't want to get booed. You were getting booed. I mean, that's from coaches. People know, will say that. So, I think sentimentality will factor in. I think it should not factor in, but it would be naive to think it doesn't creep in somehow.
I just think it's the right thing. It's the right thing to just keep them.
You're just trying to get a reaction out of me for that.
The right thing, but
to just keep. You paid him $88 million. You've done right by Russell Wilson so far.
I don't know. That's what it comes down to for me. You have a guy. If the whole point is, if you're going to be heartless enough to say Super Bowls are all that matter, I mean, he's won. He's won a Super Bowl. He was, you know, from a second one.
2 weeks ago, though, Gary, we did a show about Eli Manning, and we talked about how that gets inflated. Super Bowl thing, and all is good. We both know he won a Super Bowl on a team that was one of the greatest of all time defensively, talent-wise and performance-wise, and on an offense that ran through Marshawn Lynch. I mean, and I'm not trying to take anything away from him, but when you're building around a guy, you have to have that conversation. He didn't win a Super Bowl the same way Rodgers did in 2010 with the Packers, or the same way the Patriots have with Brady. He wasn't the fulcrum of the offense when they won the Super Bowl. In the years that he has been the fulcrum of the offense, they've been very good. I'm not saying Russell Wilson's not a quality NFL quarterback, but they haven't been amazing. They've been about the 12th best team, and Wilson's probably about the league's 12th best quarterback.
It's going to be an interesting couple of weeks. April 15th is the...
That doesn't mean anything, though. That's a nebulous, artificial deadline by Wilson's camp. You really think if they came to him on April 18th and said, hey, we're going to pay you $40 million a year, you think he wouldn't sign on that dotted line?
No, but I think if they pay him by the 15th, then we have our answer if he gets the contract.
Yeah, that's correct. We would get the answer about what they're doing with the contract if they give him a contract by the 15th. But I don't think they're going to do that.
I think if they don't give him the contract by the 15th, then they're playing this thing by ear, and I think they're going to play out this next season, and then we're getting into, you know, franchise tag. Do they tag and trade? Do they go Odell Beckham Jr. style with the Giants and sign to the big deal and then trade him soon after?
Well, here's the other part we have to consider. Robert Klimko on our staff that wrote the piece last year about Wilson's kind of handled with kid gloves in Seattle.
Yeah, Klimko and Greg Bishop teamed up on that.
Correct. Yeah, and they did a nice job with that. And what's whispered about Wilson around the league is not everybody in that locker room loves him. And I don't think if you stop and look at the totality of everything, that probably wouldn't surprise you, but maybe it's a surprise to outsiders because fans so much love him. But I don't think he is an overly popular quarterback within that locker room. So if we want to talk sentimentality and all that stuff, if you're paying a guy who some of the, at least veterans on the team, I don't know, it's such a young team now, but over the years, some of the veterans have thought this guy's not what people think, and we don't love him as a locker room guy. If you're giving that guy a bunch of money on his deadline deal and his time frame, how does that sit with the rest of the team?
Would you, if Russell Wilson asked for $25 million annually, would you just do it? You know, 4 or 5 years, $25 million annually at this point?
That's hard. That's hard. Oh, boy. Let's start with this, because when I said I would take Jacoby Brissett, especially with the money factored in, the money's one big piece of that. The other big piece is I believe Brissett, if given a chance, you could run a better offense with Brissett than you could with Russell Wilson. Brissett's a big, strong pocket passer who's more athletic than he appears to be. So how much am I paying? If I can get Jacoby Brissett at what number? What do you think he's worth if you're trying him out as a starter for a couple years?
I think there's going to be a market for Brissett next year that people aren't anticipating fully. I think Brissett's going to get something in the, let's say, $18 million range.
As a starter? So you think
starter.
He's just going to... He's in a contract year now. He's on the last year of his deal.
Yep.
In Indianapolis. I'm trying to think if I would take Brissett at 18 or Wilson at 25. I think I'd take Brissett at 18.
See, for me, and again, when we talk about Wilson versus Brissett, I think you can design a more expansive offense with Jacoby Brissett. I think it comes down to, is Russell Wilson operating your current offense better than Jacoby Brissett operating at a lower level on your new offense? And that's why I think Wilson is the more proven commodity. I don't think
Wilson operates the offense at as high a level as people think. He's played a while, so we assume he's a savvy veteran QB. I don't think he's that kind of QB.
But I think the results, I think his deep passing especially, I think that is difference making. I think that is what elevates him to the top 10 conversation, or I don't know exactly what the cutoff is right now. I haven't ranked the guys in front of me, but I think it puts him on that sort of franchise, above that franchise QB cutoff.
Perhaps. I mean, perhaps. You're awfully tied to this whole deep passing. You're in love with the deep ball. I didn't know you were such a fan of it.
He throws it so well. And some of it is the aesthetic of it because he throws it. It's so unique, the big looping rainbow throws that. And I think they're the kind of throws that you look at. And, you know, to get back to my my wonderful metaphor with Steph Curry, you watch it and you say, when the ball leaves his hand, you kind of say, that's got like a 20% chance of being completed. And it seems like he completes it at like a 40 and 50% rate. Yeah. I think it's outsized value that you get out of him there. But look, I agree with you. You are somewhat limited to what you're going to design for a Russell Wilson offense. But I think even with the limited offense, he performs so well. I don't think execute is the word because he's doing a lot of things outside of structure, but he performs so well. He produces so well that I think that's what makes the difference.
Well, and to add, I'll jump to your side for a little bit and then argue against the point I made earlier about how with Brady and they have average receivers, but the system takes care of it. One thing you do get with Brissett is maybe a little bit of an uncomfortable happy medium where, yeah, he can run a full system, but he hasn't yet. And so we can't just assume the system's going to take care of it with that guy the way we can with a 35-year-old veteran QB. So we might have to put some talented guys around Brissett. And one difference between Brissett and Wilson and a lot of players, is that they don't extend the plays the same way. And Wilson, you could say, makes players better by extending plays at times. I think overall in the big picture, it makes it harder on the entire offense to execute. But there are times where average receivers, below average receivers, or just let's call them average, have had some big plays because Wilson got on the ball out of structure. So it's all a matter of the eye of the beholder. Again, though, I don't think that stuff happens often enough. What doesn't get focused on are plays that should have been made that weren't made. Those get easily overlooked because they're not replayed 10 times on TV. And that's just, I understand how that works. When you factor all that in, I would not argue your side at all. I would take my argument.
Look, you sacrifice consistency. I realize that. And I think consistency is, I think it's applied to some guys who don't deserve to have it applied to them. I don't think there are that many franchise superstar quarterbacks who are consistent. I think we look at Tom Brady and say, if you could have that, you want that, and you do. But I think it's you can't get that. You can't get it with other guys.
Yeah, I don't disagree. What's also interesting, if I asked you what makes Brady and Rivers and Breeze so great, and I said, but you can't just say that they're smart and they've seen everything, which is part of it, of course, but what else makes them great? What would your answer to that question be?
The three of them together?
Yeah,
probably pre-snap diagnosis first.
No, that's the one you can't say.
I think Brady is great because you can basically run so many different offenses stylistically with him. You're so expansive.
What's the trait though? If these guys were coming out of the draft right now, and you're not going to say you can do everything under the sun with them,
okay.
What's the trait that makes them great?
Probably accuracy then. Deep ball accuracy.
Are you serious? Wait, are you being...
Brady and Rivers?
On deep balls or all balls?
Well, all balls. But especially deep balls.
Oh, what is the deal with the deep ball thing today? I would say I would say it's accuracy. Wait, hold on. Now I'm going to get hung up on this. You need explosive plays, which can be different than deep ball catch and runs for 20. Okay, all right. All right.
I got you, Andy.
I'm being sensitive. I would say it's accuracy and pocket movement, pocket poise, pocket mechanics, those two things. And I just think it's interesting because when we're talking all these QBs, you can get into the Russell Wilsons and what's more valuable, Wilson or a rookie quarterback, no one ever mentions, they don't mention accuracy as often as you'd guess, which is the whole point of throwing the ball in the NFL. And they certainly do not mention pocket movement. They might mention he's big and strong in the pocket, which that really doesn't mean anything because you can be big and strong and not move well and get hit and stink. But they don't ever talk about pocket mechanics, which I think is far and away, as coaches talk about it nonstop, that's far and away the biggest thing they talk about next to field vision, intelligence, all the pre-snap stuff that we kind of touched on. So when we're evaluating guys or we're talking about trades, the people who are doing these conversations in the NFL, they're having different conversations than we are on the outside because media folks, we don't ever talk about pocket movement with these quarterbacks.
You talk about pocket movement.
I know, but I'm trying to...
you're in the media.
If you put on Joe Blow draft show on TV, you might hear once a month if you watched it daily a true breakdown of a quarterback's, rookie quarterback's pocket movement potential.
Well, they gotta start listening to this show.
I would love that.
And we're pretty deep into it, and we're about to wrap it up. So they already are.
It's hard to know, too, though. You don't know who's going to have the great pocket movement because the NFL game's different than the college game. And that who was someone, Neil, was it last week, that asked a mailbag question, pocket movement, can it be taught?
Can you be taught?
Yeah, and that's hard to know. Which is makes this conversation with Wilson hard because what you do have with Wilson is a known entity. And with the draft, even if there's a guy you love, it is an unknown entity.
All right. So to wrap it up, I am a coward. I am unbrave. I'm going to give Russell Wilson his money, and I'm going to move on so that fans aren't mad at me. But you're looking to deal him for two ones and get that rookie quarterback deal.
Yeah, and then I'm going to put my house in an LLC and get an unlisted number so no fans can find me, and I'm going to keep doing my job as the czar of the Seahawks.
All right, that's going to be a wrap. We'll have plenty of draft stuff coming up.
Guess everyone has an unlisted number, don't they? Cell phones are kind of making that unlisted number thing obsolete.
What, unlisted number? Do you have an unlisted landline?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. The joke was outdated.
Yeah, it was a little outdated, but that's okay.
Probably can't put a house in an LLC either very easily. Anyway.
I'm not really sure.
You were ending the show. I'll let you get back to ending the show.
Yeah, we are, and then we're gonna go into your witness protection plan here and really figure out what needs to be done. But that's gonna do it. Thanks to our researchers Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor for making this sound smart. Thank you to producer Brandon Nix for making this thing sound good. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. We're going to have draft stuff. After the draft stuff, we're going to have mailbags. So send those mailbag questions in. Talk back at mmqb.com. Just put podcast in the subject line, or we are both on Twitter. We are both on Facebook. You can get us there. To get all of our shows as well as the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer featuring Jenny Brentis and Connor Orr, just subscribe to the MMQB NFL podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including the mmqb.com, si.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, radio.com/10things, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We'll see you guys next week.